Super Gaming Best Friends. Super Gaming Best Friends. Monkey throwing barrels. Hunting ducks with dogs of scenarios, and we'll play with you.
Hello, and welcome to Super Gaming Best Friends, the premier podcast of HorribleNight.com. It is Wednesday, March 14th, 2012. I'm your host, Josh Lee, and joining me tonight, my bestest of super best friends, only when we're gaming, I've got Justin Lacey with me.
Hello, Josh Lee. I have a question for you.
Yes.
Would you like to trade Tendo tapes?
That would make us super gaming best friends.
I've got some Tendo tapes.
God. This past haunts me for
actually,
life.
No, that's just for making me mad and making me doubt my Rock and Roll Racing Super Nintendo game purchase when you told me the game was too light and that I got ripped off. And it turns out all Super Nintendo games are much lighter than I remember.
We haven't put it on a scale yet. It still could be an ounce short.
The game worked. That's all I cared about.
Well.
That was an expensive game.
Definitely didn't have a Super FX chip in it, though.
No. No battery backup on that, either.
Also joining us tonight, Ethan Moses.
Yep, that's me. It's Ethan Moses. I'm here to talk about video games with my friends.
It'd be weird to not have you here, but after that, I kind of wish you weren't. No, I'm just kidding.
What's you up, should man? Be. I'm doing great. It's a great day. I'm really hot right now, and I hate to complain, and this is definitely a first world problem, but I'm really hot and sweaty, and I don't know what to do about it.
I was going to say, you sound sweaty right now.
I'm sure I do. My tongue is sweating. I mean,
your voice is dripping.
Is it? Yeah. It's horrible. This is bad. I didn't put deodorant on today either. I've basically been cooking in my own juices all day in my computer room.
I'm picturing a sweat ring on your beard.
Oh, I shaved, so it's gone.
I'm really glad we're recording this on the internet right now. I don't want to see or smell that.
Yeah, it'd be bad.
Slightly less sweaty tonight, JP LaFrance is joining us. JP, what's up?
Hi, Josh. I am not. I don't think I'm as sweaty as Ethan. That's pretty descriptive that he went into there.
Well, you're a doctor, so you can't sweat, or it makes people nervous, like on the operating table, right?
Yeah, that's why I drink a lot, so, you know. Cut down on the nerves and everything. So
I don't know. Like all the raging alcoholics I ever knew were like super sweaty people.
It does explain why.
Were they fat though too?
Yes.
Well, then there you go.
Okay.
Well, I'm not that fat.
Well, you need to suck it up and turn on the air conditioner.
Well, I did. It's just not working. Hey, why am I getting advice from a bird that's on a turntable?
Dude, don't disrespect DJ Blue Jay.
DJ. Some great Skype avatars. In
this have. I have no idea what that thing is. It looks like some kind of penguin Rob the Robot.
It was from the last Toy Story short. That's all you need to know.
Okay. All right. Awesome. All right. So on this show, like many others before it, we're going to go through some really cool stuff. You guys are in for a real treat.
I can't wait.
Stuff like the on-the-spot question.
Ah!
Which is always... Everyone just waits on pins and needles for this question and what we have to say about it. What are you playing? Well, we're talking about the games that we're playing. We do HorribleNight.com site updates because if you listen to this show, you go to the site too. If you don't, you're an asshole.
Sometimes when you host the show, you don't go to the site.
Well,
yeah, did you just call yourself an asshole?
Whoops.
Update's my favorite.
Yeah, see? It's good. And then we end the show with our threesomes of the week, where we talk about shit that has nothing to do with video games. I don't know why we do that, but we do. Some people like it, I guess.
Question?
Everybody does.
Yes.
Everybody likes it.
I love it.
My mom likes it.
All right, I'm going to read this. I'm going to read this question, guys. This question comes in from a very special person. It was someone whose parents loved him very much, Strafe Anderson.
That sounds like the character from a fictional story written by a high schooler.
Sounds made up.
It kind of does. Sorry, Strafe, if that's your actual name.
It's a good nickname, though.
Yeah.
He better ask a damn good question.
He's from Albuquerque, so I'm guessing he's going to.
Boo. I hate New
Ethan,
Zealand.
Ethan, you think you're hot right now. You should be in Albuquerque.
Okay, here it comes. When can I pre-order the Steam box?
Oh, you idiot!
We might have been trolled. I'm not entirely sure here. But, yeah. The Steam box, guys. In case you didn't know, there was a rumor going out this past week that Valve, the makers of Steam and video games, was going to put out a actual computer with one hardware configuration, possibly. There was a lot of rumors going around. None, it's all bullshit. They are not going to be applying their expertise towards hardware, at least not at the time being. They always take those surveys on Steam to figure out what people are using. You think like, hey, they could use their data mining all the time, just like Google. They could probably put out the hardware so people could play more of their games and it'll make them more money. Sounds cool. They were building hardware for testing their theater mode.
The big UI.
The big like for using on your TV, because you can play games from your couch these days if you hook your computer up to your television via HDMI. Possibly, or other various means. So that's going to be a thing. And they just had built some hardware to test that out. And somebody saw a picture or heard about it, and this got all over the internet, and all kinds of respectable, reputable websites reported on it.
It was news.
And, yeah.
Or was it? Only Steam box I know about is the rooms we're podcasting in right now.
Yeah, you don't have to pre-order that. You can just come over and sit right next to me.
But
give me $20. I'll put something steamy in a box.
So do you think that they were just kind of toying with people with their response of, well, we don't have any plans at this time? Do you think Valve's going to head down that way? Or
I think Valve's pretty used to just saying shit and not caring what anyone thinks about it at all.
We might be working on Half-Life 4.
Or we might be playing with our knife collection. I don't know.
I was going to say,
we might own the trademark to Dota.
I kind of feel like maybe Valve was being nice to all the video game websites that jumped on board this news story. And they were like, that's really kind of cute. They got excited about it, and we don't want them to feel bad. So we'll just kind of be a little bit, broad with our response. That's kind of the impression I got, because I feel like I think people got pretty excited, somewhat excited. I don't know. I don't know.
There should be
rumors. There's all kinds of rumors. Like, I heard that Josh has a UTI right now. That's a rumor, but I'm not going to report that.
I actually thought I did the other day.
Website,
I thought I was like, oh my gosh, I just can't. I couldn't get all the pee out, and I thought I was like, man, do I have a UTI?
Oh, do you really have a UTI? Oh, I feel really bad about that.
But I'm fine now. I'm fine. It was just like that one day. I think I just drank too much the night before.
I think you might want to have Michael Clark dunk and grab your nuts.
I would do that anyways. Ethan, what were you going to say, JP?
Well, two things now. I could perform surgery on your parts. Make sure you get all the pee out right.
Is that surgery with your mouth?
Oh, that's gross. No, I know how to buy a Steam box. You don't have to pre-order it. You go to Best Buy, you buy one of those big cabinet looking things that you turn it on and it runs on Windows, and you download Steam and you have a Steam box.
Well, I was going to say Alienware is pretty much selling one of those these days too.
They had
their little PC that looks like a console, but I kept thinking that Valve really just I remember a couple months ago, there was a photo of Gabe. It was just a giant photo of his face, and then the background on his computer screen was a wallpaper that said Half-Life 3, and I just think Valve knows they can just, kind of fuck with us, and I think they should systematically just, release random photos from around their office and just see what rumors start, because,
if they are way too busy making
playing Dota
billions of dollars shit about any of this rumor crap, they don't care, man. They're rolling in it.
But it'd be funny.
Is making a console really in their best interest? I mean, let's be legitimately honest about it. If they're making as much money as they are with this platform, there's no need for them to go into the console market. I mean, they've cornered the digital download market for the PC. So why bother?
This would just be a PC, a pre-built PC that meets its specs to play, most of the games on Steam would be, I think, the idea behind what people were talking about. So this is still just a It's just a computer.
Just go to Fry's then and have Steve build you a computer.
Right, but would people pay for a computer with a, with Steam branding on it that was like a kind of guaranteed to run?
If it was priced lower,
giant library of stuff,
If it's priced lower than Alienware's shit, absolutely.
Right.
I've grown out of. I get tired thinking about building a new computer, even though I know it's cheaper and not that hard. But if there was something more certified out there, especially, not knowing where the next consoles are going, I think Valve's in an interesting position. They don't have to really do anything, but they certainly could if, you hear a lot of the PC developers, especially Epic lately at GDC, kind of complaining, that these next consoles, they better – really take a huge leap forward, or they're going to get behind PC games. Yeah. And if that kind of happens, Valve's probably in the best position to kind of capitalize on it.
I don't know. So you're saying you would buy the Steam Box?
I mean, I need all my information, but yeah, if it's comparable or better than whatever Sony and Microsoft put out in the next couple of years, I wouldn't rush out and buy it now, but I am excited for that big UI, though.
Yeah, me too.
The gaming in the living room with my PC is becoming much more intriguing. So,
yeah, actually, that'd be pretty cool, because I don't really use the desktop on my computer that I have, my home theater PC, anyways. I'm using Xbox Media Center. Which has nothing to do with Xbox, at least not now. Windows Media Center. For a lot of the just my regular TV and stuff like that. And then Steam is literally the other thing that I run. So a little bit better interface would be pretty nice. A lot of people play on their
Would you TV. Get three big screen TVs to complete your OmniView?
Oh my God. if I had the disposable income for three 60-inch.
I'm just giving you goals, man.
Infinity. Oh my God. Put me in a beanbag between them all. Give me some snacks. I'm done. You'll never see me again. I will sit there till I die, probably 48 hours later.
Ugh.
It's gross.
What a way to go.
That happens.
What game would you be playing for those 48 hours?
3D Sex Villa?
Yes. Yes. Two.
Not one.
I imagine a lot of people die one's crap. As a result of that game.
I think the first one has Infinity Sport. hey, at least you went out with – you probably were satisfied, Like other games, you're just playing the game.
Have you not played Skyrim?
Well, I play Skyrim two hands. I don't know what's going on. I think that probably answers Stray Fashion's question. Okay. If you have a terrible question to send us, you can email us at ask@horriblenight.com, and we'll make fun of you on air.
Do we also accept good questions?
If that's all you got.
Okay.
Go ahead. It's fine. Guys, it's time. For what are you playing?
Do-do-do-do-do-do.
I want to start this off, actually, with a little bit of a group discussion. This past Friday?
Friday.
It was Friday.
It was Friday.
We had a horrible night out at Netheads. It's like the seventh Horrible Night Out, something like that.
Sounds about right.
We played video games. It was Extreme Enough was the name of the event. We had some competition games. We had some fun games on the side, Super Nintendo, Xbox, PC, a lot of different stuff. And all of us were there. We're all playing. It was a good time. You guys want to talk about some of those games that we played? Justin, what was your highlight?
Well, actually, I was surprised the most by Snuggle Truck. That was one of our three featured games, because it was actually the one I was worried about the most. So we featured Snuggle Truck, Rock and Roll Racing on Super Nintendo, and then SSX is kind of the big console game for the night. And Snuggle Truck, Ethan was responsible for kind of maintaining the game challenges for this one. So he constructed his own unique level. What was the name of that level?
Friendland.
Friendland.
No, it was Friendship Land.
Friendship Land, yes.
And it is a vicious level. It is not nice at all. But I had not played Snuggle Truck. I just heard good things. And I was surprised to find out that Snuggle Truck actually controls a little bit like Trials HD, and which is one of my favorite Xbox Live arcade games. But in this game, the back of your truck is full of cuddly creatures. Are they alive, or are they just stuffed animals? Do we think they're living stuffed animals? Is that accurate?
I thought I heard them scream when they fell out the back, but I'm not sure because I hear screams in my head all the time. So okay. I could have been just something else.
I didn't see any blood when they hit the TNT and exploded.
No.
But, Josh, you never got to the TNT. What are you talking about?
Shut up. I did too. That's where I died every time. I never actually finished that level all night.
Yeah, I thought we'd play one of the regular levels, but Ethan constructed this just vicious ramp with a steep drop off into a pit full of TNT. And did you know it was survivable, or was it like survivable by accident?
I don't know. I thought it was kind of accidental that people survived it. I put quicksand at the very bottom just to ensure that nobody got out, but a couple people did. I was surprised. I think that there was a lot of courage that was shown that night. And
I have tape of you saying this level's unwinnable.
I know. And somebody won it, which, yeah, it's cool. I'm okay with that, you know. But I'm going to make another level that's called Not So Friendship Land, and it won't be winnable. It'll be impossible.
That sounds like fun.
Oh, I figured you just make it flat and you just drive straight in.
But the reason the game was so fun for me was just everybody's reaction to the game. It wasn't even about. Sometimes it wasn't even about the person playing the game. It was people watching them and then just realizing how ridiculous that level was. And so, I mean, if you manage to survive the fall and have all of your cuddly creatures still in the back of your truck, you're going to land on some dynamite. It's going to flip you in the air and throw all the creatures up in the air again. And you got to try to catch them before you land on more TNT. And then hopefully you can get across the level. So, or you can get incredibly lucky like me. And somehow I think I technically won. The game said I won, but I landed in such a way that the TNT blew me and my empty truck and all of the cuddly creatures across the finish line, and it counted. So I'll take it.
Yeah, it's cheating. I think that was cheating.
Yeah, I thought it was crap. You know that I think that level editor may want to take a cue from Trackmania. When you make your own track in that game, in order for you to save it out for other people to play, you actually have to beat it.
Oh, nice.
You have to it's what they call validating the track, so that way people can't make super impossible things. And
I took Ethan at his word that he had beat it, but then multiple people did actually finish the level.
Just
out of like hundreds of tries.
Yeah, but that's
fun. There were a lot of us that didn't. Actually, you know what? I did make it across the finish line once, but it was...
I don't believe it.
It was... Well, it was bullshit because there was actually no animals in my truck. But it said there was one.
Josh, you had a hard time getting up the mountain when I was still there. Got falling backwards.
Yeah.
Let's move on to another game.
Hey, one more thing. Snuggle Truck is free on your iPhone.
Oh, cool.
Oh, it is. I didn't know that.
And you can play... Friendship Land. That's why I tweeted you guys that picture.
Oh, wow. It was cross-platform?
Yeah, so that, like, 24.4 that I posted on Twitter to you guys, that was on my phone.
Oh, that's... Okay, that's cool.
I thought you were literally just making up a tweet.
Yes, I handcrafted that entire image on Photoshop when I got home.
That's impressive.
I assumed it was, like, a picture of your ass or something, so I didn't click on the image.
I was hoping it was a picture of his ass.
It'd be really sweaty right now. I could send you one.
Hopefully you didn't use the good camera on the phone so we don't see all the details. Ethan,
hey, highlights,
event highlights for you.
You know, actually, it's funny because there's a couple guys that come to these events every once in a while, and they don't really play video games all that often. Like Craig and Casey and Mark and... I don't get the impression they play video games. Huh?
Chip.
Candy. But they always play Killing Floor, and I always join in with them, and it's always a whole lot of fun. Just a bunch of friends trying to survive some mutants, you know? And we sucked. It was bad. We were really, really bad. I, you know, that's a tough game. because it just doesn't play like a lot of those shooters. You know, it's pretty unforgiving if you get caught, you know, in a big mass of creatures, and you know, headshots are really, really important. And we just kept dying, and we died on easy and couldn't even get past like the second wave on medium, and it was a little bit disheartening. But then we got into a rhythm, and that was great. But then every computer I touched from there on out basically stopped working. And for a moment, I thought I had like super electricity powers, which would be neat and something that I could share with my wife when I got home by turning on lamps from across the room. But it didn't turn out to be that. I think maybe they were just having some issues. So it was a disappointing night, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, because wow. You found out you didn't have electric superpowers.
Oh. Yeah.
What is it about that game? Like, what do you think draws in, you know, not to call these guys out, but draws in people that don't play a lot of games lately?
Well, the setup,
it doesn't seem very accessible to me.
Well, wait a minute. Why did they start playing this in the first place? Is this because you introduced them to it?
No.
Gamers, how would they even find Killing Floor?
I don't think so. I think we were just, it was the very, one of the first Netheads, and we, one of the first horrible night out at Netheads, and we all just kind of sat down, and they were looking for something to do, and I don't remember who was, I know it wasn't me, and we just sat down to play. I think that, you know, what I've noticed about Netheads, and just playing with people in the same room, is you can get non-gamers to play, you know, for a lot longer periods of time if you're kind of sitting next to them. And that, I mean, that's like the perfect setup. And it's a simple game in terms of like you shoot, you run around, but it's fun enough, I think. And it's kind of like, it gets really exciting and kind of goofy sometimes because it's one of those games, you know.
But it's on the same computer and as easy accessible as like Left 4 Dead. That's what I kind of like, but they've all gravitated to this.
Well, you can play
game
with six people in this game.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And it's a lot easier to. I feel like I always struggled getting into Left 4 Dead games, and I still do at times. But Killing Floor, for some reason, I never really had any issues finding a game online. Like I could jump onto a game really quickly, and so that I kind of see, you know, maybe in a made up scenario that I just created in my head, is they jumped on and they tried to play Left 4 Dead, but they had trouble getting in, and they saw a game that looked kind of like Left 4 Dead mechanically, and they thought, hey, let's try this one. And then from there, it was love. I mean, you know.
Or death.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a little bit less of a commitment, like time and effort commitment, too.
That's
than Left 4 Dead,
too.
Because it's quicker to get in and out, and the levels can be pretty short. It's just kind of – it's a survival thing. It's like a wave-based game. So while, yeah, you progress around levels some, it's not like Left 4 Dead where there's this like narrative kind of that's built into the game and the levels themselves. So, yeah, pretty cool though, and a hot tip for Steam users out there: when you have this happen to you, which happened to us that night, which is sometimes you get a game that says this game is currently unavailable, and try to launch it through Steam. A lot of times it's because there's an update that part of Steam knows is required to launch, so it stops you. But the part of Steam that does the actual updates doesn't know. So if you verify the game's files, it'll re-download some. Or download the new stuff or whatever. Verify game cache.
Hot steamy tips from Josh Lee.
Heard it.
Yeah, it was a good
tip.
Was that what happened on Friday? Because my computer just stopped working.
No, you had superhero powers.
Well, I don't know about that, but I have a couple different Steam installs. So, but hey, do that, and like 2 minutes later, everything's working fine.
Yay.
JP, you played games Friday. Right?
I did.
Correct?
Yes, I played a game on Friday that I really enjoyed, and I need to go buy it. I played SSX for quite some time on Friday. I was determined to beat Justin Score with his Horrible Nighter account on his J-Devil account. So, I really enjoyed that game a lot, and I am really looking forward to picking that one up. I think that they did a great job of keeping the old feel of SSX and then kind of making it more modern with all of the I guess casual online challenges that are there, and it looks like the economy system works really well. So, I mean, I'm really impressed. It's kind of, it's nice to see EA Sports do something right. So, I mean, that might be unfair to them, but it's good to see them do something right.
No, it's better than I could have hoped for when I originally saw SSX. It's got some weirdness to it as far as they try to beef up like a story mode and play up that whole Deadly Descents angle, but there's enough game modes in that game that just I really like how they've done. There's always world events going on the game that you can, you basically, you jump in and you compete. They could be like a couple hours long, a couple days long, or a week long, and you would get in and throw up your high score, and you get reward with a bunch of kind of in-game points or cash to buy a bunch of gear, because there's loot in this game, and but there's always something to do, and that was something that a lot of the EA games, the sports and racing games, have kind of really done well the last few years. I think ever since Hot Pursuit kind of rolled out their auto log, like, I just think it keeps the game competitive, keeps it fresh, keeps giving you reasons to come back and play, but not have to wait on friends to be competitive. And it's executed really well, and you know, the core SSX gameplay is there. If you're a fan like me, it's been too long since you last got to play that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's one of those things where I haven't really played a game that has, I guess, the casual online on your own terms. What I'm really looking forward to when I get it is, I guess there's like tournament creation where you can create like your own online events that are, you know, within the time frames you talked about, and you can open it up to friends of friends and whatnot, and you can like throw money into the pot as to, you know, what the takeaway to win is that. So I'm looking forward to working around with that one. So, yeah,
that was the first I'd seen of the game.
It looks good, doesn't it?
Yes. It's pretty. However, I have a question. Do other levels take place on flatter ground? Well, I guess
no.
My problem was it looked like the entire level was inside of a big gutter. Yeah, you can move around left and right some, but it was still.
There's not like the freedom that maybe was there in SSX3, where you can kind of navigate your way to other slopes. I wouldn't call them narrow, but I know what you're saying as far as it is a chute. It is a downhill track. But there's a lot of variety in the different mountain ranges that you go to.
Why is there like a big, you know, trench like on the side of this mountain in the first place? Did like spaceship crash?
Because it's a video game. God damn it!
Oh, just if saying. A spaceship crashed, I would be into it. Like, maybe there's something out there that you have to find. You know, like maybe at some
if
point
you believe enough.
Your snowboarding friends get separated and killed. And then you have to call in a alpha team to come in and scan, but then they crash and they have to run to a mansion. That sounds better. That sounds
Are you asking for more movie. Action in your racing games too, not just your horror games?
Yeah, kind of. I'm asking for more sci-fi thriller horror in my snowboarding games, maybe.
What would you call this game?
What was that game called? There was another snowboarding, like Red Mountain or Red Planet or, not Red Planet. That's a horrible movie.
I was going to say, snowboarding on Mars? That sounds awesome.
Ooh, why not? Yeah. Why not? Think outside the box, you know? Snow's 2000 late.
Yeah, what's up?
Did you like the Tony Hawk series?
Enough. I liked the idea of you have an X amount of time, free roam, go earn points doing tricks. I liked that idea.
Okay, well, the reason I ask is because you're questioning why these mountains are chutes. Could you explain like 50% of the things that go on in a Tony Hawk game? Like why is Spider-Man like
the
skateboarding
tricks
outside of your school?
I'm not sure what you're gonna.
You guys are why you guys are asses. No, I mean part of. They use topographical data to kind of create the base for a lot of these tracks. Like, it does take place on real mountain ranges and that sort of thing. But they do have to gamify it at some point. I mean, this game is ridiculous.
Listen, I get that. I'm not trying to say that this isn't realistic enough or whatever. I'm sure it would be boring.
I mean, what do you want to go like just kind of board around the mountain and pick up hookers and steal their money? Is that? You want an open world snowboarding game?
No, it. Oh, I guess my point is it didn't look like those. You've seen those, you know, people do the videos of, you know, slow-mo HD, you know, guys flipping around going down mountains, and it just looks like this kind of gorgeous, big, open, epic vistas. And I just, like, on that level we were playing, I just didn't see that. I was like, yeah, it's kind of, we're like in a big
half pipe. We were, our challenge was featured on the training track, the opening track, and it gets, like, there are some serious vistas and some serious drops in that game. But, Ethan, cool. I just found the game that you were talking about, your little sci-fi adventure, snowboarding game. There is a game back in the PS2 era called Dark Summit. And here's the giant bomb description. When the military takes over a ski resort, you take to the slopes and try to uncover the mystery in this story-based snowboarding game.
Sounds cool.
All right.
I love mystery, you know?
Is this for sale somewhere? Can we buy this on eBay? What is it? I want to play it.
It does exist.
Oh. Anyway, so, yeah, besides that, we also played some Super Nintendo. Rock and Roll Racing was pretty good. I was missing RC Pro-Am.
Yeah, me too. That was the first thing I thought of when we started playing that.
But, yeah, it was fun enough, I guess. But we were also on a big square track, so
Playing with some ballers, man.
Yeah, I got my ass kicked.
I drove backwards.
I think I did too, Ethan.
Well, I think Ethan did on purpose.
I didn't know you could use nitrous. Like, I forgot. It's been so long since I played that game.
My opponent told me that I could not use nitrous.
Oh, that's nice.
And then about halfway through, I discovered the button that does so. So I was a little upset about that. But you know what? That's all right.
Lots of fair competition.
Yeah. As soon as we finished with that, though, the sports games came out. And that's when it got real. We started out with Ken Griffey Jr. presents Major League Baseball Home Run Derby competition.
Dude, I was so excited.
God, I missed that game. Played a lot of that. Justin, you said you played an actual full season.
Okay, yeah, what I've decided is I hit this wall. I played through a full season, but I never owned the game. My buddy down the street owned it. But what I determined after thinking through it was, we'd play this game on the weekends or after school, like every day for however long it took. We would alternate games. So I played, we used one team and we just tried to push our way through the season. But we played an entire 162 game season in that game. And it's a really repetitive game. That's the funny thing.
Yeah. Although the games could go pretty quickly because they don't have, you know, it's not like if you play, you know, the show or something, there's so much presentation stuff involved. The game's going to take way longer where you can just kind of hammer through a game of Griffey. So, yeah, I played a lot of it too. I don't think I did a full season, but it was fun stuff.
And Josh is being modest. He was our Home Run Derby champion.
I did dominate for like
can of corn.
Can of corn. Yeah, that was the thing. They didn't have the the MLBPA. Yep. License at the time. They just had the team licenses. So it was kind of funny. So they put the character, like the actual players in the game, but they just had funny names.
Ridiculous names.
The stats were supposed to match up with their people. But yeah, it was good. That was good stuff. And then we broke out the NBA Live 97 where Cole Monroe challenged me to a little one-on-one, and he got decimated, completely destroyed. And it's not like I'd been practicing that game, but I was just dunking all over his face. I was the Bulls without Jordan. He was the Houston Rockets, who at the time
without Barkley
were really good. No, he was in there. He was, they had some like fake name on him. It was like a
player power forward or something.
Yeah, that was it. Right.
But you can see it. Why of all the NBA Live games, even, I mean, this is probably the most random game in the collection that evening. But why NBA Live 97? Do you know why?
It was the newest one that I had.
Okay.
It might have been the last one they made.
I think before they jumped systems, maybe.
I'm sure. Like, I mean, 90, think about 97. Like,
95 year, was 95 was
98.
95 had, was the best one of all of them.
That's what I argue. Some people will argue 96, but I never hear anybody talk about 97.
Like, so. I just have so many Super Nintendo basketball games. Some of them I don't know where they are, but like I mean, I've Bulls versus Lakers, NBA Showdown, you know, all the live games, and that was just kind of on the top of my stack. So I was like, I'll grab that one. It's good. It plays very similar to the other lives that something about those old sports games, because I don't really I like watching sports. I like going to baseball games. I like watching football on TV. Basketball's good in the playoffs, you know. Like, I'm a sports fan. However, sports games today, like, I can't play them for 5 minutes. I get so bored.
Yeah.
Like, they're awful. They go for realism, and, like, I just don't really want that in a sports game, I guess. And but you go, you know, you go back to those, you know, 16-bit days, and there's so many really fun sports games, and they're just games. They're an approximation, rough approximation. You know, they got the basics of the rules and everything that's in there, but just a lot of the action is pretty unrealistic, and it's better for it, I think.
Well, I wrote an article this week clamoring for more drugs and more robots in our sports games. So,
I like it. So,
we did play one other Super Nintendo game.
I go, oh, man. Okay, UN Squadron was one of my favorite Super Nintendo games. I'm a big shmup fan, and that was like the first of that, you know, era that where I got that. That actually was my launch title. When I got my Super Nintendo,
oh, really?
I got UN Squadron. And then I rented some, you know, Pilot Wings and whatever else, but that was the one I owned at the time, the only one. So I played a lot. It was awesome. I loved it. I've since played the arcade version, which I think is inferior besides frame rate. It's I don't think it's as good. And the sequel wasn't like Air Carriers or something. Again, not all that awesome. The original, I think it still holds up pretty well. And when you and then so
well, let me preface this. Maybe okay. I set the tone wrong. I never owned UN Squadron. This was another game that one of my friends owned, but I played it very limited, and I don't think I've ever gotten past like the third level. But I got Josh's hopes up because, you know, I turned the game on. He's super excited. I'm ready to play this game. I have fond memories of it. But he's like, well, make sure you choose the right pilot, because you get to choose one of three pilots. And I naturally chose Greg Gates, the third option, the bearded wonder, and got Josh really excited. And then promptly put on a very poor performance of UN Squadron because I just didn't remember how to play.
It's because you got Greg Gates, man.
Sandwich mouth.
Well, great. If you pick Greg, you recover from hits faster. So, which I thought was going to be really good for you. however, you would just take a hit and then you would immediately throw yourself into the next missile that came onto the screen.
I thought that you got points that way. It's like Ikaruga. You absorb the damage, right? Is that how you play this?
Yeah, that's it. No, you sucked. You sucked at UN Squadron.
I did.
You beat the first level, which everyone does. And then that was it.
Could not beat the stealth bomber.
There was something wrong with the controls. The controls were really sticky, as if something had gotten on them during the course of play at some point. Probably. I don't know, in the lifetime of the control. It's just real sticky. I don't know if anybody else noticed that, but I had issues. I'm usually pretty good at those games, and I had issues moving around as well. So I don't know if it's us being bad at the game or just Josh Lee's.
Josh being way too excited about them?
Yeah.
Yeah, usually when people use that as an excuse, I usually tell them, like, well, he could have cleaned it off. But, you know, I won't do that this time. How about that?
It was deep, man. It was in there deep. I'm just saying. Real deep.
You were in
there. I didn't have a Q-tip either.
Oh, God. So that was our Super Nintendo experience. I still love getting that system out, but it might be on its last legs. We have to be replacing it because it was having some problems. I was blowing in a lot of cartridges. Let's say that, getting that thing to work.
I know. I was glad that we busted that out. Our previous Horrible Night Out events had been, you know, much more tournament focused, and they take up the featured games take up the entire evening, and we were able to kind of keep those games open, but at the same time, we got to play a handful of random games.
Yeah, it was a fun night. Played a lot of games. It was cool hanging out with everyone. Some, you know, some fans and some staff members and friends of staff. So it was really cool. If you guys want to join us at one of these things and you are in the Indianapolis area or feel like traveling to it, when we do these, we post them up on our website, horriblenight.com. It goes on our Facebook page and it's open to all. So
yeah, we're looking to do these at least every other month, if not sooner. So we will keep you posted as we plan the next one.
And if you're interested in hosting a Horrible Night out in your hometown, let us know. Albuquerque.
Strafe, we're looking at you.
Strafe.
That's a long plane ride, man. That's like 24 hours.
No, you just dig a hole like Bugs Bunny.
24-hour plane ride? Are you talking hot air balloons?
Yeah, New Zealand. We're delirious.
Spirit of St. Louis, man.
Ethan, you need to drink some water. I think you're getting dehydrated.
I think I might be, too.
I'm going to snowboard all the way there. Hey, Ethan.
Yeah?
While you're in this middle of this like heat fever, do you want to talk about any other games you've been playing? This would be fun if it's not made up.
Yeah, no. It won't be made up. But Josh is going to talk a little bit more about our evening together. It was a date. It was a date. It was a whole day date, actually. But where we played Saints Row 3, or the third, excuse me. But I actually played the DLC Gangsters in Space, which I have really been anticipating the Saints Row the Third DLC. I actually bought the season pass because the game was so fun. I just thought, there's no way you could screw this up. There's no way that this game could be bad. You know, all DLC will be fun or goofy or whatever, and it is awful. It is bad.
Oh, no. What?
Don't get it.
But Ethan, it's called Gangsters in Space. Did you take that into account?
But yeah, the whole game is a big goofy scenario that was totally fun. And it's not that Gangsters in Space wouldn't have been fun had it been featured in the main game, but there was just nothing to it. It was just like a skin, you know, like it just, there wasn't a whole lot of thought put into it. It felt really rushed out. I was disappointed because I was really hoping they were just going to go all out on it. You know, the first one, the Captain Ginky's or Dr. Ginky's, whatever, those missions, those were fun. It added a little bit to the game, but it was just extra missions. I was really hoping for kind of an expanded experience with the game, you know? I mean, again, the DLC is $6.99, so it's not super cheap, but it's not super expensive either. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I thought there would be more to it, and I felt like it was bad. It wasn't fun. There was nothing fun about it. It was the biggest grind that I had in that game, and I basically beat every mission in that game on all the, I mean, even the crappy escort missions that totally suck and are really frustrating. I even beat those, and this was more of a grind than that. So I hate to do it because I really have supported Saints Row the Third big time. I really have thought, you know, everything about that game was awesome. It more than likely would have been my game of the year had I played it before 2012. But yeah, no, avoid all the DLC. It's shit. It sucks. It's bad.
Damn.
It's bad, everybody. That's a reflex review. Yeah.
Well, a little bit harsh. You know, I almost bought it the other day. And
I'm glad you did. Didn't.
But yeah. It's called Gangsters in Space. That's got to be fun.
Well, you don't go into space, right?
Yeah, that which was the number one disappointment because, again, with Saints Row...
So Gangsters from Space? Is that more accurate?
Yeah, no, not even that. It's based on a movie. Essentially, you're...
Gangsters pretend to be in space.
Yeah, this is not spoiling anything. I mean, you're supposed to be in a movie, but so you're not actually going into space, which I think was a missed opportunity because, I mean, again, the narrative of Saints Row the Third is that, you know, anything can happen. They don't ever take themselves too seriously. Mm-hmm. And they didn't take that opportunity. It was it felt lazy, and I was disappointed because I'm so soured on DLC right now. I'm beginning to think, like, in my mind, you have to have it. Like, you have to have every aspect of it. I mean, I'm thinking back to Fallout 3, is just every piece of DLC is going to extend the gameplay experience, and thus it's beneficial. And I'm realizing that when I play through a lot of these, especially with, you know, the Gangsters in Space DLC, it's kind of like, you know, maybe some of the sequences that I played weren't actually as much fun, or maybe they were kind of overdone. I think, no, it's just the DLC is lazy. It's crap. And I'm just, I don't know. They could have done better. Why even release it? You know what I mean? Why even do that? It's almost ruining the expectations for, you know,
I don't know if they're overthinking it or what's going on. Cause I just thought if any game was set up to get DLC right, it would be.
Oh yeah. Like, I imagine it. I have a huge issue with finishing ideas. I can generate ideas all day long, but when it comes to following through with them, I never get anything done. And this is what, like, I felt like I made this. Like, I was like, holy shit, wait a minute, we've got a really good idea. And then a day into it, I got completely bored and walked away. I mean, that's what it felt like, is they had you know, all the different, you know, kind of the reskin vehicles or whatever and the characters. And they're like, this could be a really good idea. And then somebody got tired and took a nap that lasted a little bit longer than they anticipated it, and they had to put it together at the very end of the time. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not looking forward to the last one. I mean, that's the thing. That's the bad thing is I don't really want to
play. Did you get the season pass?
Yeah, I did get the season pass. Yeah. And I mean, I'm going to get it anyway. I'm going to take it for a test drive, obviously, because, you know, I really have enjoyed that game. But I'm almost, you know, nervous to do that because I don't want it to ruin my impression of that. You know, with Fallout New Vegas, unfortunately, that kind of happened. Is the DLC just made me realize how much of a grind maybe the game was and how they basically ran out of ideas. And so I kind of feared for further Fallout games. And now looking at this, I'm like, you know, Saints Row, the next Saints Row game, I have high expectations for. But hopefully this is not. Hopefully this was just they were tired. I'm assuming they're tired. I don't think they ran out of ideas. I don't think they got too outrageous and they just couldn't outdo themselves.
I'm surprised that more people really haven't been talking about how low the percentage is out there as far as DLC that's worth playing, or especially DLC that's great, because games like that I could probably count on one hand. And you know, with Bioshock 2 and Red Dead Redemption, like, and one of the Mass Effect 2, a couple of the Mass Effect 2 ones are okay, but that's the only DLC I've heard people, you know, kind of raving about. And I think they are. They're either getting lazy or it's a B team, or it's feeling more and more like a cash in these days.
Yeah. I never say that about these. I mean, I'm not one of those guys that's like, oh, I should get everything for free, and oh, it's all about the money. When I think it's about the money, that there's an issue going on. You know what I mean? And I started just sketching down ideas for an article which about DLC, and it's kind of a kick in the pants, because loyal fans who buy the season pass. I mean, I'm going into it blind. I'm basically making this statement. I trust what you've done in the game. I never get serious. I'm getting really serious about Saints Row the Third. But I'm saying, I trust in what the game has done. I trust in what the developers have attempted to do. And I'm basically giving you this money before I get the content. And it's kind of, I don't know, it hurts my feelings a little bit, just a little bit. Makes me feel a little bit sad. So there's going to have the third DLC that's supposed to come out on this season pass is going to have to blow my pants right off my butt, like right off my butt.
God, you've really depressed me about just DLC in general now. But you're right.
No. Don't feel bad about DLC, because there's good DLC out there still. Like the Ballad of Tony Gay and the Lost and the Damned were good. I mean,
yeah, Borderlands. But, how many years ago was that?
That's not. That's different. That's like saying that it's like the Oblivion, the big DLC, the Shivering Isles or something like that. Like, right. That's an expansion pack.
Yeah,
that's what we should call that stuff. It says DLC.
The Rockstar episodes.
That's not the same as these like one-off little, you know, $5 to $10 things.
Yeah.
But all these games that we would talk about that have some good DLC probably also have like four other pieces of DLC that are not awesome. So I don't know, but we don't. You know what? We're not in like game production, sure. So we don't know exactly how this plays out. I mean, this could be a matter of you know, small teams. They're developing in a vacuum, so you may have a small group of guys that think that whatever they're doing is a really good idea or something's going to be awesome. And by the time they get to the point where they start getting feedback, it's too, you know, they don't have the money to go back and redo it. I mean, like, I don't know, you know, who I know it's supposed to be built into, you know, the budgets now, and everybody keeps saying that, hey, you know, there's a plan for all this DLC, and there's a, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm never the guy that bitches about, you know, the stuff should have been free if it was, you know, like if it was planned all along. That's not what they were doing. I can vote with my dollars pretty easily on that one, and I do quite often. But just to have, you know, the people sign off on bad ideas, I think that's the bigger problem. Is like somebody involved in the game, whether it's this one or another one, says, you know, like, hey, you know, I've got this idea for a set of missions, and somebody else says, oh, that sounds great, you know, at a meeting or whatever, and then it goes forward. Like, that's probably how it goes down, right? I mean, it's not like they're taking polls on their website to see what people want to create.
It's just bizarre, because like I was actually kind of behind season passes for DLC when they were first announced. Like, the one that first caught my attention was L.A. Noire's pack, just because that game was, you know, the chapters were divided by the different cases you're on, and it made sense. Like, I was like, they could do almost an infinite number of cases, and there was such high quality in the regular game that I would buy into that. And but lately, like ever since then, I haven't seen a season pass that has gone over, you know, over extremely well, to the point where I can't even make that purchasing decision until based on if the game is great or not. Like, if for as great as Saints Row the Third is, I did, you know, I've been burned on other games, so I doubted these DLC, and I'm kind of glad I didn't fork my money over at the beginning. And it's just, I'm going to be wary for a while now.
The yeah. season pass is just another pre-order.
Yep.
And yeah. you shouldn't pre-order things.
Yeah. Well, and I think, and I understand that. I think that sucks, though, because to me, I always like to pre-order, because I feel like if I'm excited enough about a game and I trust the developer, you know, I'm going to get what is advertised. I'm going to get what, you know, I think that I should get within that. And there's going to be crappy games, don't get me wrong, but it's sad to me. And totally, I don't pre-order stuff anymore. Like, very rarely do I do that anymore. And it's kind of sad not to do that, because even with the huge, highly anticipated games, you can't trust that what you're going to get is going to be great anymore. You know, like, there's very few games that I'm not tentative about. And even though in my mind, I'm like, well, it's going to be good no matter about it, I still have reservations. Yeah. You know, I look at the games like, you know, even when Gears of War 3 came out, like, I didn't pre-order that until basically I knew that I needed to, because we were going to be playing that game the following week at, you know, the gaming marathon. And that's weird to me, because I know it's going to be a good game. But now, just because of how I've been burnt in the past on some of these just horrible showings, I'm just nervous about it, you know.
I still think that you should never pre-order anything unless it's something like Xenoblade Chronicles. That's going to be only, you can only get that from like two places, and you got to pre-order, you know, like, that's, there's a demand problem or a supply problem. So, okay, pre-order there. But any other game, it's not like there's supply issues on, you know, Mass Effect or whatever. Like, why give someone else your money before you get the product?
Because I really wanted the Collector's Edition Steelbook, and I waited too long, and I didn't.
That's kind of how I am, too. But when I'm really excited about a game, I mean, I just like to know that there's no chance I'm not going to get that game. It's a completely irrational frame of mind. I mean, trust me, I know. I know there's not any supply issues. But still, I'm kind of like, you know, I just still remember the days where you would go in to get like a Super Nintendo and they'd be sold out, and you'd be so sad because you saved up all your garage sale money, you know?
Yeah, well, those days are long gone, so it might be time to switch it up. Just saying.
Can't recondition myself.
Just saying. JP?
Yes.
What else have you been playing?
Let's see.
Make it good. Make it something fun that we haven't never talked about.
Josh, that's way too much pressure. I'm already intimidated to be on this show, and now you're putting me on a ton of pressure. That's fine.
We're all friends.
We're best friends.
We're best friends.
We're talking about Darksiders. So, in an effort to...
Oh, Darksiders 2?
Yes, I got an advanced copy of that, and I didn't tell you about it.
He wouldn't be alive if that was the case, because I would murder for that.
No.
Death.
Anyways.
In the spirit of the game.
Yeah, that makes sense. No,
please talk about Darksiders.
Well, I wanted to kill my backlog a little bit before Mass Effect 3 showed up, so I went ahead and powered through Darksiders, and I played that game on Apocalyptic, which is the hardest level available.
Sounds
and
good.
I loved every freaking minute of that game. That game was absolutely amazing.
So it was your first playthrough?
That was my first playthrough, yes.
Okay, I didn't get that. That's I wish I'd played it on Apocalyptic. I kind of feel like a wuss now.
Well,
yeah, I do too.
The thing about playing a game like that on Apocalyptic is that it really forces you to use like pattern recognition skills again, like the old ass games that we used to play. So, you know, there's a lot of boss fights that once you catch the pattern, you can get through it, but your margin for error is lower because you have like, you know, less opportunities to get hit. So, now I can't think of the guy's name, but the big tower dude towards the end, like, you really only can get hit by him three times or you're dead. So it makes it really tough to try to navigate through certain boss battles. So, but yeah, like you guys have said, it's the best Zelda game to come out in years. A long shot.
I love
it makes me really excited, though, because from what I'm reading about Darksiders 2, it looks like they're going to take that genre of like Zelda-style 3D game, and they're going to just take it to the next level and kind of start putting Nintendo in the dust, because Nintendo hasn't really advanced, you know, the Zelda at all over the last several years.
Dude, my remote was the sword, though.
Yeah, but the thing is that you can add in funny mechanics like that, but you're still playing essentially a reskinned Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I hate to make it that generic, but it's the truth.
No, I'm agreeing with you.
And the thing is that the boss battles in Darksiders, and Justin, I'm pretty sure you're going to agree with me, are much more memorable than any boss battle I had in Twilight Princess.
Yeah, I blocked out Twilight Princess from my memory.
Is there a princess in Darksiders?
No. Well,
some hot angels.
Yeah, there are some hot ass angels.
Well, yeah, that works.
Okay. She's kind of a bitch, though.
That's fine. That makes them hotter.
Yeah, actually, that's kind of hot.
Now that you bring up angels, here's another element that I really, really appreciated about Darksiders is multi-form boss battles. Like, that is something that's got to come back because, you know, back in the 8-bit and 16-bit eras, you didn't beat a game until you got through the third or fourth, you know, form of the final boss.
Make it a boss.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the final boss was only two forms, and I thought the second form was a little bit wussier than the first form, but, I mean, that's neither here nor there. It's nice to have kind of a boss battle progression again. So that's something.
That's cool, but just give me a save checkpoint between forms. If I have to beat all of them again from the start, no good.
No, but then I disagree with that because then you're taking away some of those old classic elements that I really like. You know what I mean? I understand that Ninja Gaiden did that, but you know, would Castlevania be as memorable if, say, you beat the first one of Dracula and then you get to go right to the second one when you come back up the stairs and have to fight absolutely nothing?
Yeah. Well, why the hell would? Yes, it would be fine.
No one
likes to be pissed off when they're playing games these days.
I think you're both right. I think that there seems to be I don't know if it's just our frame of reference, but it seems to be a crowd that is developing a little bit of a louder voice that wants more challenge out of games. But I think games got to give you the option. Because I think you're right, Josh. And I there's been a lot of conversations about skipping cutscenes or skipping action scenes, depending on what your preference is in games. And I think, you know, these games are advanced enough now that just give the gamer the option. Let JP choose that he wants to play on apocalyptic and he doesn't want, you know, every checkpoint. But let Josh continue from where he wants to continue if he just wants to, you know, see the, you know, experience it.
That's interesting. Has a game done that? I can't think of a game that
L.A. Noire allowed
where you save.
L.A. Noire, oh, not that, but L.A. Noire allowed you to skip action scenes. That was kind of
You know, I'm just thinking like save checkpoints, like removing them removing some of them for a hard version.
How hard would it be for a developer to mark basically a checkpoint as like a major or a minor checkpoint, and you just basically choose, I don't want any of the minor ones, and go from there?
Yeah, you could set that up in the opening preferences or settings in the game. I mean,
could do it. I don't know. I know what the fuck I'm talking about.
I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with, hard games being hard. I like, you know, Dark Souls, and I played Left 4 Dead 2 only on the hardest difficulty, like realism and expert, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, and it's, you know, it can be hard and frustrating, but it's like a fun kind of hard. For certain types of games, or when I'm at the end of a game, do not throw difficulty walls at me. Don't make me redo things over again. No, we don't like doing that in real life. Like when you're at work and someone tells you, oh, you know, you did that wrong, or just do the exact same thing over again, please. Like that would frustrate you. People get frustrated. People don't like that. It's no good. Give me checkpoints between boss forms. But I agree, multiple boss forms are cool.
It just, I like
me halfway.
give me the option. Let me play how I want to play.
Sure, yeah. that's fine too.
Well, and the whole reason I went apocalyptic.
You guys should go occupy Wall Street. All your game choices and stuff.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
I agree with you, Josh, but I think, I don't know, man. As long as it doesn't, if it affects the game because they're trying to toy with all this stuff, you know, to me, you make a game and you have a difficulty in mind. If you can't hang with it, you know, you know what I mean? There's games that they have made way too, there are games that are way too easy now because of that. And I think there's way more easy games than hard games at this point. And I think that if it's a story-based game, yeah, tweak that. You know, that's fine. But there's certain games I don't know. I think
it depends on the game. You're right. It depends on the game or the genre. Sometimes it's appropriate.
Because I think that's why Burger King. We can't have it our way on everything. You know what I mean?
I think that's why we're talking about this game in particular, because it does harken back to some of the old school boss battles that we enjoyed. But if you do try to say, if you do throw in the, you know, continue from anywhere option, I think it would have lost its impact. I don't think we would have been talking about it as much, honestly.
I agree. Well, and the whole reason I chose to play on the level that I did was because, you know, last year I started that series on difficulty in gaming. And so I challenged myself to just up the difficulty level on certain games and see what happened. And I learned from that game that I liked it a lot more when I actually died. And I died a lot. Don't get me wrong. I didn't burn
I believe that.
That game. I died a lot. I mean, there were some big boss battles that I didn't die at all, like the worm. I didn't die during that one. But, I mean, just random encounters, you get overwhelmed by 6-7 dudes, the next thing I know, I'm dead. So,
saying I actually upped my difficulty up after reading JP's article last year, too. Made games better. You can cut that out.
No, don't cut that out. Now I'm flattered. Thanks, Ethan.
All right, so we have one last thing to discuss. One topic. it's a big one, though. So, Mass Effect 3 just came out. I just beat it. JP, you're in the middle of 3, right? Justin, you're in the middle of 2.
Yeah, I'm at the intro, too.
And then Ethan, where are you at right now?
Like 3 hours into the first one.
Oh.
He got past that hurdle.
I'm playing all zombies with you, like, guy right now.
Let's go in order here of completion. Ethan, like, how? Okay, you were 3 hours in probably like a week ago, right? So what happened? Yeah. Why aren't you farther?
Well, I've been working a lot, so it's been tough to. It's just been really tough for me to sit down and get into it. I got into a flow 2 weeks ago, and it was fine. I can't. It's just tough. It's tough to get into it. I got past the dialogue part. I thought I did, but then I got into a little mission that I'm talking to a lot of people, and I have to have a long day. I have quite a few days off this week, so I'm going to try to jump back into it this week, but I'm not going to lie and tell you that some of the I didn't read any reviews on Mass Effect 3, but just the fan noise, and I hate myself for it getting into my head, but it was tough because it was all over the place. I couldn't escape it. I couldn't do news and not stumble across sort of disappointment. And it got in my head. And I mean, again, that's not cool. It's not anything against Mass Effect at all, but I was kind of pissed. And I'm kind of, I don't know, I'm kind of pissed at a lot of news outlets right now because they just are really giving who I think are trolls a lot of attention. And it kind of fucked things up for me. I'll be honest with you. I did my best to avoid it, but I'm so tired of hearing about how this group of loud jackasses doesn't like something, and every news outlet and even the ones that I respect cover it like it's news, which it's not. It's a small sect of people who are complete babies who can't deal with the fact that they don't have control over, you know, the overall conclusion to their favorite series. And, you know, regardless of whether or not it's disappointing, who gives a shit? You know what I mean? Like, I understand you put time and effort into it, but like if you knew what was going to happen and if what happened exactly is exactly what you wanted to happen, that's not very fun. You know what I mean? You've got to have sometimes I've watched movies that have shitty endings or television shows that have shitty endings, and it's not exactly what I wanted. But after thinking about it, I was like, well, but I mean, it kind of gave me something more to think about. So basically, I'm pissed at a lot of people in reference to Mass Effect right now.
Okay.
God, I'm angry today. I'm never this angry. I'm angry.
Sweaty.
And hot.
Sweaty and angry.
Damn it.
Okay. We'll come back to that point, because having played all the way through Mass Effect 3, now, obviously, I'm not going to spoil anything. However, I do have an opinion on everything you just said. We're going to come back to that, though. I want to talk about other points in the series here, like Justin.
So I wrapped up Mass Effect 1 this weekend on my FemShep, or I do mean this as a term of adoration, and my mother actually instilled this into me that bitch can be used as a compliment. My bitch Shep build is going well, and I got excited because I think I had told whoever I was talking to on the side about it that I was right at the end. I forgot about a mission entirely in that game, and I kept having those moments in Mass Effect 1 where there were major sequences in that game that I thought were in Mass Effect 2, just memory-wise. And Mass Effect 1 is a much better game than I give it credit for, because 2 just – it feels so different that it just really altered my perception of 1. But that's a damn good story in Mass Effect 1. And
I was going to say it's the story about 1 that you like so much, right? I mean, yeah. Obviously the action got better in each game, I mean, but it's 1 still, story still... was mm-hmm. –
I can still play through it, and you know, I also made a few different decisions. Like, I've been going through a lot with a lot of the BioWare games, a lot of these RPGs, where you know I'm actively playing as a renegade, and it sometimes I have to make conscious choices to. I know I naturally want to choose the Paragon option, but I am sticking to a path, and what I have to do in these instances is really define in my head who this character is. It's really, you know, I think way too much about this, but I've decided that my bitch Shep, she's all about the mission at all times. And I had to make a very, very difficult decision in Mass Effect 1, and people that have played the game will know what moment I'm talking about. And, I didn't want to go through with it because I had been playing the game a certain way, but when I thought about it, I was like, one, I want to make my Paragon playthrough different than my Renegade, but just what would this character actually do? And because there are also ways to do positive things, but do it in a Renegade way. And so I found myself that I can't just always choose the Renegade option. Like, I don't ever get stuck into choosing the Paragon option, but sometimes you have to be the jerk, or sometimes I have to protect the mission. And so that was a lot of fun for me to just kind of figure out what I'm going to do with this character, especially knowing how the next few games play. So then I got to import her into Mass Effect 2, and I'm about 2 or 3 missions into that game, but I'm still astonished at the leap in gameplay and graphics and presentation in Mass Effect 2. It just, it grabs you right from the start. And so I'm excited to, I didn't know after playing the intro to Mass Effect 3, if I'd be able to push through on Mass Effect 2, but I really think I'm going to do this before I finish Mass Effect 3. So Josh, I'm not gonna be able to talk to you about Mass Effect 3 for a while.
and how previously in Mass Effect 2, how far did you get?
Oh, I beat Mass Effect 2.
Okay.
Yeah, so thoroughly. So
I was gonna say he's sitting on 2 builds right now that he's waiting.
Yeah.
To start.
I have a level 50. I have a level 50 Shepherd. So.
Okay. And you're like
you played the demo for 3, so you kind of know what the setup is and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But you went back to 2, which is kind of exactly what I did, which was, for whatever reason, I stopped my playthrough of 2 a couple hours before the end. I think it was like 4 hours more I had to put into it. And I just kind of – it's kind of petered out, you know, got into something else. And about 2 weeks ago, I popped in the Mass Effect 3 demo, got really pumped, went back, finished 2, which was – I thought was really awesome, the last – you know, the end of that. I really enjoyed it. And then I just pounded right through 3. So that was pretty cool. JP, Yeah. You're in the middle of three, right? You said you were like 10 hours into three right now, right? Is that correct?
10 hours into three, and that includes From Ashes. So I bought the launch DLC that everybody rabble-roused about. But first of all, that is a really, really good piece of DLC. It ties up a lot of interesting loose ends, to say the least, and then the character you get is a total badass. Like, that was worth it alone in itself. And it's kind of interesting because that DLC takes you right back to where it all started. And so I thought that that was kind of a nice little kickoff to it. So,
So it's not DLC that you advise playing at the end of the game.
No, you want to play that pretty early. Okay. And I got that recommendation from Brandon when we were chatting about the game the other night. Two missions in, and he was like, you need to go do it. I did it as my next mission. And I was like, holy shit, why didn't I do this sooner? So
good to know.
Yeah, I got a little tied up in a story arc that I'm really interested in right now, because what I've noticed very early in Mass Effect 3 is that I think I have like four story arcs going on right now, plus a love triangle.
Only a triangle? So
there is a lot to frick manage.
Love octagon.
Only a triangle, yes.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing is that, you know, in this triangle, I say to one, you know, one says to me, we're still good, right? And it's like, oh, yeah, baby, yeah, we're good, we're good. I'm gonna keep you here because I need to see where I stand on the other side. And then I go to the other side, and she's like, you know, we're still going to be together, right? And I'm like, yeah, baby, yeah, absolutely. So my Shepard is a Paragon baller, apparently. So, yeah, he likes to play him. So
straight Paragon for you.
Well, I talked to Brandon about this, too. I play more... my Shepard play is more emotional. Like, I'm going with how I would react personally to these situations. So it leans more to the Paragon side, but there are times, like Justin said, that you have to be a dick about things. Like, you
it's
absolutely
really,
have
really fun to hit that right trigger and punch a dude.
It is. It is really fun to hit that right trigger and punch a dude, and sometimes it's needed, but, you know, I made some decisions early on that I've noticed I am not on par with anybody with, and it's coming to a point where I'm facing that decision again, and I found myself like going the same direction with it, and it's, you know, it burned me on one side, but hopefully it's going to help me on the other side.
I'd love
the
it.
Road. It's just,
I love it when issues in Mass Effect come back to bite you. Like, it's just like, that's the drama side of that game that I love. It's just like, oh, I thought I was done with that. It's like, no, this person's coming back, and.
Well, what's crazy is that, and I know Josh can back me up here, is that you have two, you know, 30 plus hour games, depending on how you play it, worth of decisions that are all like intertwining in three, and they're all just kind of coming together, and you have to go out and manage all these decisions and leverage them to your advantage. And it's just, I mean, I don't think when you look across three games or three movies or whatever, I don't think there's been something as well written as this in a long time. I'm literally emotionally attached to the universe and to the characters, and it's insane to me.
Yeah, I'm totally with you there. My playthrough, I'm going pretty straight Paragon. I'm not just playing Goody Two Shoes just to play Goody Two Shoes. I figure, like, a guy in this position kind of – I think he's got a job to do, just like Justin was saying. But I also think that for somebody that everybody looks up to as a role model, I'm thinking more like, you know, Captain America or Captain Alliance, I called him earlier today. like a character like that is going to always find a way to make things right. It's like I'm always going to take the high road because – I'm better than that, you know, kind of that kind of attitude. And, you know, it's like Superman kind of does the same thing too, right? Never, you know, it's when shit hits the fan, you think like, oh, got a tough choice to make. Like, no, there's a way out of this. You know, we can fix this. And, you know, and if not, then I'll shoot everything. But I'm playing pretty straight Paragon because of that. And so I'm, you know, all the way through, I did lose – people in two. You can people can die in your games. People can die in all these games. So that's not like really spoiler. But in two, there's some things that can basically, if you just don't do some stuff, basically out of negligence, I lost some pretty key members.
It's very Paragon of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, I lost people too, all right? It's okay.
Yeah, and I just didn't realize that was that you know, if I just didn't go do some of these side missions and stuff, that people were going to die. Like, that's – so, you know, that kind of sucks. It was just, like, randomly, like, at the end of one of the missions, I just see dead bodies. I'm like, wait, why did they die? What? And then I go, wait a minute. Those are the people I didn't do this side missions for or whatever. And, like, that was kind of poop. So a little bit of a warning.
Know how to play the game. Jeez.
Yeah. So, but you know, I went with it. I was like, that happened. You know what? That happened. No, I'm not reloading.
I admire you for that, Josh Lee, because I would go back and fix it.
Right, right. And that's okay. I'm okay with things not playing out exactly the way I wanted them to, because in the narrative it makes sense. Like, hey, man, that shit happened. You know, I'm like, oh, that's sad, but you know what? That makes for good story. So I was like, all about that. So yeah, go ahead.
I mean, that's where I think I get sometimes overwhelmed. And I remember, Justin, you talking about, like, you know, playing games like Terraria, and you saw all that you could do, and yeah, you kind of got paralyzed with that. And I mean, that's kind of how I feel about this, because I always have this in most games I play. I play as what, the Paragon type character, and I'm just like, I think way too much about all those decisions. And so I spent time trying to release a dead body from military custody. I spent like an hour trying to figure out how to do that, you know, and I'm just like, That to me is what kind of shakes me up. And again, just kind of like I talked about, and kind of what JP was saying, is because there's so many different things that will kind of affect the next couple games. It's just, I'm kind of like, man, it's taxing. It's emotionally taxing to think that you may fuck up like 70 hours worth of gameplay. You know what I mean?
As an expert on video game paralysis, because I went through that with Fallout 3 as well, I can say that what I've learned from those games, and like I was saying earlier with Mass Effect, is, you know, make the choice of who your character is. And then with all of these games, especially take into account that there are three games to Mass Effect, there's a massive learning curve in that first game to figure out how that universe works and what decisions you make are actually affecting things. Like, yeah. So it's easy to get caught up in that side stuff and think they're bigger than they are. But you'll quickly figure out like how to solve all the stuff. Like all I can say is like, it's never as hard as you make it out to be, but it does take half a dozen of them before you figure out, oh, that's, you know, when they have me do fetch quests or whatever, this is how this is going to work in this game. So
All right, cool.
Stick with it.
Yeah. And, I was just playing through three. I get the kind of the same way. Like I want to do things, you know, kind of the right way. And the game, I thought, did a good job. They all did, but in three especially, because there's so many really heavy decisions you make. I always felt like just naturally I would just pick the stuff that my character would say or do, and things worked out the way I would want them to. Like, there are those times when, you know, I think in games like this where you think you don't have control over situation. It's like you don't, you like, you wouldn't get the option to do, like, you think, oh, that's not what my character would say, or that's not what my character would do. I never felt like that in 99% of the game. So, you know, I'm going through, and I'll say this, three is better in every way, to me, better in every way than the others. So like the shooting, the action was fun 30 hours straight for me.
Cool.
I enjoyed the action, and like the way they do the weapons and the upgrades to the weapons and that kind of stuff, I thought was just about perfect.
They streamlined one and two in that regard.
Exactly. Awesome. Yeah, exactly. And I like that they've refined it each time, you know, and that's the one thing that's probably had the most change to it, which is the combat. Everything else, you know, the story beats and all that kind of stuff, they're taking cues, you know, and it's informed by the previous games. But, you know, some of that stuff, it may be improved in quality, but it plays out kind of mostly the same, except that you do have a lot of like really major decisions. And like, there's a whole once you're about halfway through three, or maybe even the beginning of three, you've got a whole bunch of story arcs that are running parallel
throughout
all these games.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got four open right now.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So the ones that JP's talking about, like, you're – there's so many different things going on, and they weave pretty naturally, I think, into the game so that, you know, you've got a very urgent main sort of mission, like, that you can't just go and do right away. Like, you've got – there's prerequisites, essentially, and this happens in – you know, like in two, there's a lot of, like, you know, you got to go build your crew kind of thing. And I'm sure one did as well. I don't really remember a whole lot about the, what happens in one, but you, it's been a while, but you're doing all these other side things. And in three, I felt like they all had a really, yeah, they all had a purpose. They all mattered. And every time I would finish one, I would go, man, that was good. Like, I was really satisfied with how it ended, what story arcs it wrapped up, and everything that took place was epic. Like, the action and the, you know, whatever, the writing was really good. You got to see all kinds of cameos from, like, people in the other games. Like, everyone shows up. Like the culmination of all this, all these aspects of one and two, you know, coming to a head in three. And then wrapping up in really satisfying ways in my playthrough. Again, I'm doing the Paragon, so, you know, I don't know if you get the same sort of satisfaction playing Renegade or whatever. But I was so I was so happy with so many spots in that game. Like, I would constantly go, oh, that was fantastic. Oh, my God, that was awesome. My girlfriend watched me play through most of that game, or listened to it, actually. She would be, like, working on her, like, a jewelry or something, and then she would you know, she's doing working on some hobby stuff while listening to a game instead of a TV show or podcast or whatever. And she was, like, really into it. And she would constantly, like, something sounds like it's cool going on. She'd come over and watch. You know, it was really epic, you know, adventure. But then the end happened. And
did you get depressed?
I got to tell you, I do want to say if you like one, you like two, absolutely play three. There's so much of it you'll be so satisfied with. It is amazing, all up to a point. And probably the last 10 minutes of the game. After spending like 100 hours in that world, being emotionally invested as well, considering the time between when I first played one until now, you know, that sort of investment – that was probably the worst game ending I've ever experienced. You know, I don't think – I'm not going to go sign a petition so that they'll, like, ooh, go change the end, you know. But that's not – I can't imagine that that's the minority of people that beat Mass Effect 3 are going to be the ones that complain about it or that aren't happy with it. I just cannot possibly believe that. There is, like, a ton of noise online, and I get that, you know, usually people online are, you know, there's tons of people that are not on the internet that don't get to speak their opinion. Yeah, but everyone thinks it's bad. And it was just not satisfying. And I don't want to say anything else because I don't want to even hint at, I don't want you to draw conclusions. But personally, I thought that was just that maybe just the worst game ending I've ever experienced.
Oh, and, damn.
Can you edit that out?
I've been editing it out for all weekend in my head every time somebody says it.
Okay. And
not that I don't like that. I don't like I, you know, I respect Josh's opinion. And but it's not going to affect me until
and I hope it
does. I experience it for myself. So
yeah, I don't want it to, like, you know, turn you off from playing the game because there were almost 30 hours of amazing game in there. I was loving it, you know, every minute. And but when I finished that game, I sat there with a look on my face. I was like, Wait a minute. What just happened there? Wait, hang on. And I was trying to make sense of it. I'm talking to Kylie and I'm going, well, so I guess what this was, and we we're just sitting there scratching our heads. We're talking about it. And I went from confused to just, like, really, I felt fucking depressed, man. I was like, oh, man, I'm so disappointed right now. To, damn it, I spent a lot of time in that world, and you just fucked me. What the hell? Like, you just, like, I feel just not like, and it has nothing to do with, like, it not turning out, like, exactly the way I wanted or whatever. That's not it. It was just shitty. It was terrible writing. It was poop. I thought it was just absolutely awful. And it did for a minute. It made me, I actually was like, wow, I wish I hadn't played any of those fun games. Then like 2 days later, I'm going, okay, you know what? I'm remembering all the really awesome parts of that game again. And now I'm thinking about like going through it again, just to, as a like renegade, just to see all that cool stuff again from a different point of view. So it's not, it hasn't completely killed the series for me. But for that one day there, had I been on the internet typing on message boards, you would have got the same thing out of me as all those people that are bitching online. So they're coming from a place that where my head was at. You know, I just didn't voice it that way.
Well, I would just say we'll cover that story as more of us can actually talk about it. But
yeah, I would love to do like a spoiler cast or something where we can actually discuss all the story beats of all the games, all the ups and the downs and all that stuff. That, I think that'd be fantastic for people that have played it. I'm sure they'd maybe enjoy that as well. So any other thoughts on Mass Effect there, reactions to this terrible thing I've done?
You kind of got on a soapbox there for a minute, buddy. No, what I guess
feel strongly.
How I want to wrap it up is, you know, to the point when you were talking about making huge decisions, I've noticed so far that the way Mass Effect 3 is written, that I'll get into a huge decision and I know it's a huge decision and I'm reacting emotionally based on like the circumstances of the situation. So if it's like there's a world of shit coming and I have to make a decision, I'm making like a snap judgment just as fast as I can to move on. You know what I mean? Like I'm just kind of wrapped up in it. But I guess the end all of Mass Effect is that the beauty of this game is that it's so deep and so like, what am I thinking? It's like so deep and organic that you are going to have a different playthrough. Justin's going to have a different playthrough. Ethan's going to have a different. We're all going to experience this game differently, and it's probably still going to be pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah, I've already looked up some like YouTube videos of how things played out differently for somebody else's playthrough. There were moments where I went, "Oh man, what? How would this have played out if I had so and so in party or that was still alive, and then watched the scene and was like, holy shit, I was laughing my ass off because it was really funny or whatever. So I mean, there's definitely a lot of reasons there to play through it multiple times. That's what I get out of that. All right, well, I think that'll wrap up our what are you playing and
thanks Mass Effect Josh
discussions there. So I'm so sorry.
Thanks Eeyore.
I gotta be honest though, man.
No, I appreciate that.
I gotta tell it like it is.
You're as level-headed as it sounded like you could be, so.
Yeah, but
I'm not listening to you. I was sitting. I was going la 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 la.
I felt like I had to say that because I know so many people, and even myself before I finished it, heard all these people bitching online and thought, whatever, you know, that what the hell? Why are they, you know, a bunch of whiny turds? But man, that's just about. They kind of nailed it, some of that. At least some people did. Some people can articulate. But anyways, Justin, would you like to update us on what's going on with HorribleNight.com this week?
I think I have the inside track on that website and can do that. There's a lot of small changes still going on to the site. Last week we added a lot of the action is taking place on our right-hand sidebar. We switched to a two-column layout, and now we're starting to try to find ways to highlight more of our active original series and our multiple podcasts. So I'm very interested in feedback on that, so feel free to shoot us a message through our contact form on the site if things are working well for you or you have some ideas. I'm definitely open to we're just trying to evolve the site and make it easier to read and also make it easier for you to access the content that you like. We've also started a little bit of a resurgence of how we're handling our Facebook page. So for those of you that haven't gone out and liked our Facebook page, you'll be seeing a lot more content, daily content coming on that on our Facebook page that's going to be unique to Facebook. And so we're going to try to do some daily conversations basically on that site featuring different topics. So be on the lookout there and share with your friends and encourage them to like the page and help support Horrible Night, and we'd appreciate it. And then lastly, the Horrible Show will be live next week. We took it's been a while since we've done a live show, but the Horrible Show will be tackling our monthly topic of gamecations. And so Josh, Ethan, myself, and Cole will be live next Tuesday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on our Twitch TV channel, twitch.tv/horriblenight, and join us in chat, and we'll keep you engaged with the show, and see if you can't derail us. We always appreciate that. But that's kind of it for horriblenight.com updates.
Cool. Thank you. Excited about that. The live shows are always super fun, and you really should join us because the chat gets pretty hilarious sometimes.
It does get silly. That is for damn sure.
Yep. All right. So that'll do it for the regular portion of our show. For everybody that leaves here, thank you for listening. For everyone else, it is time for our threesomes of the week, where we're going to talk about a whole bunch of shit that probably doesn't have anything to do with games. And it's probably going to include some stuff that you really don't care about, like books.
Books. I usually check out for that.
Yeah, so just you can skip through those. Those usually last about 30 seconds. JP, you want to kick us off, man, with your threesomes?
Sure, I can kick us off. All right, so I don't know if anybody cares, but I went back to school recently, so I find myself listening to a lot more music. So I've started gravitating towards M83.
Wait, hang on. Why does that – what's that have to do with anything? Where are those related?
Why are those related?
Yeah.
Because I spend time like – I write a shitload of papers. You know, when you're writing code, that's another thing that I like to write code to music.
Okay. All right. You're writing tunes. Okay. Sorry. Yes, I wasn't making the connection. My bad. Go ahead.
You should have prepped me as the new guest of the show better. So I could have been like, hey, I should give a little bit of insight.
My explanations are the host's fault.
I assume that this wasn't your first rodeo.
I don't know, Josh. Have I ever been a super gaming best friend?
I don't think you have yet.
Yeah, so you should
after
have,
that
should,
after that bullshit.
This is the trial.
It's like giving the new quarterback. Just say, "Hey, go. We'll tell you about the plays later. Just go figure it out."
That's right.
You know.
Okay, so what's this music?
I've been listening to a band called M83, specifically their album "Hurry Up, We're Dreaming," and it's a M83 is a French band, and the best way that my brother and I were able to describe this band is that it's 80s. What do I want to say? Let's see, 80s pop, like alternative music, like kind of all rolled into one, but in a good way. Like it takes all the good elements of 80s music and puts it into these songs. I know it sounds ridiculous, and no, kind of is, but it's completely awesome.
I'm just glad Step's not in the name.
I'm laughing because I really like this band, and I across the board, unless it's really ridiculous heavy metal, like kind of hate 80s music. So if he had tried to describe it to me, I wouldn't have attempted to listen to the band. But I think I discovered them through Spotify. And yeah, as far as writing music and coding music, you're right on, JP. It's fantastic.
Well, and there's a couple songs that I actually want to highlight. So on the first disc, that's called Claudia Lewis. And for some reason, when I listen to this song, it makes me think of the ending scene in Revenge of the Nerds. When Poindexter's got like the violin going at the end, like the like chorus hook to that song just makes me think of that scene every time, and it makes me like smile, like ear to ear smile. It's freaking awesome. So,
that song makes me happy.
It does. That song should make everybody happy because the nerds won because of it. So yeah. And then there's another song on the second second CD called Steve McQueen that's really good. You know, the thing I really appreciate about this is that it's like a true good double disc, like Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness is what comes to mind. You know what I mean? Because it's like the first disc is completely different and organic from the second disc. You know what I mean? Like you could listen to one or the other independently of each other.
Double disc sounds dirty.
Now it does. Thanks. I'm glad and I don't buy discs anymore.
This is why we call it the threesomes of the week, right?
Getting Dirty with Josh Lee. That's the new title.
hey, Josh Lee. Yeah. Speaking of Getting Dirty, I really like to watch Survivor. And the new season Survivor started. Yeah, this one is Survivor One World. And so the concept
such
is
a dumb title. Such
what?
A dumb title. No. Let me explain. It's not dumb when you understand the premise.
Is this on Mars also?
No, I think it's somewhere randomly in the South Pacific again. But anyways, they instead of like bringing back old cast members and like giving people a second chance by sending them to a completely different island, it's all new cast members. And instead of having two separate camps, they have to share one camp, which is where you get the one world from. So you have guys versus girls, and they are just cat fighting like no other, and it is freaking amazing. And they're the guys, when they had to vote out their first person, they ended up like taking out the strongest person because they have. So their leader is a flamboyantly gay guy, and he is absolutely hilarious, and people are scared of him despite him not doing any work at all around camp. But what was kind of crazy is that on the last episode, the guys won the challenge, and Colton wanted to so desperately get somebody out that they gave up their immunity to go to tribal council and vote this guy out. And you know, the funniest part about it was when they showed up to tribal, just the look on Jeff Probst's face was absolutely priceless. So,
oh, Probst. Actually, yeah, I've never watched Survivor, but I felt like that was appropriate.
Yeah, I didn't start watching Survivor until China. So,
the wrestler?
Yes, the wrestler. No, the season in China, that was like 6 or 7 years ago at this point, but I've been watching it pretty consistently ever since. So,
have they ever done Celebrity Survivor?
No, but they've had like.
I'm surprised.
Surprise Survivor?
No, usually they'll have like the spouse of a celebrity. Like there was one season where Eddie George's wife was on there. It's not like The Amazing Race where Marcus Pollard was on the last season of The Amazing Race. So it's just kind of, I don't know. If you showed up as a celebrity, it'd be bad. So anyways,
all I'll say about Survivor is, hey, that show's still on. And also, I remember reading about the description of the show about it. I think it was probably a year and a half before the first season aired. And just the concept of the show, the way they pitched it as like people might die on TV, basically was like so ridiculous compared to what it actually turned out to be. But
yeah,
you know, this has never been my thing, but you know, I understand why some people like it.
The phys ed teacher from my hometown high school, which is very small in the middle of nowhere, Southern Illinois, was on Survivor in one of the first seasons.
Oh wow.
Butch, if you remember that guy. He might have been there with that one guy, the Indianapolis native. What was his name?
Rupert? Or
something? Yeah, he might have been on there with him. But
I was going to ask if that was your phys ed teacher.
No, it was a different guy. But yeah, that was – it was kind of like a – we just saw it one day and went, what? Yeah, it was like, oh my God. Let's, you know, so all 20 people from our hometown all knew about it then very quickly. But yeah, so, oh, and my art teacher, again, and I had like a graduating class of 22 people. I mean, this is a small school. My art teacher was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Well, so
how about that?
Your hometown has like the highest percentage per capita of reality show participants.
I'm sure it has to be. I mean, that's got it. Well, they should put that on the road sign as you enter the town.
You know, the next time you go home, that tells you that you should probably buy a lottery ticket.
Yep.
In that town, for sure.
A lot of people buy a lot of tickets in that town. A lot. When you're in people in small towns, that's what they do. It's like clinging on to their religion, their guns, and their lottery tickets.
Yeah.
So, okay, what else? What was your third item?
My last one is another piece of music. So if you didn't know, it was a really nice day out today, and so people like to blare music, and I was talking with a friend, and somebody drove by blaring Whitney Houston, and so I thought to myself, I'm going to blare appropriate nice weather music. So I started listening to the Beastie Boys anthology, The Sounds of Science, which was the B-Sides Greatest Hits album that they put out. I think it was in 2000, 1999, 2000 when they put that out. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, that thing.
You're so old.
That must have been really annoying to everybody around you.
And that was the point. Hey, I'm going to blare age-appropriate, windows down, nice weather music, all right? And so I chose the Beastie Boys.
Ugh.
I was walking to my car today, and somebody was blaring Sublime, What I Got, and since playing Saints Row the Third, it just has a completely different connotation. I was like, they're about to do some shit.
Were they singing it?
No.
Hey, Sublime though is appropriate good weather windows down music.
I will
give that the thumbs up. No, I think the best track on this whole like collection, it's another two disc set, is they have a Fatboy Slim remix of Body Movin', which is pretty badass. So
So they took like a kind of a cool song and then put some whiny rap lyrics to it.
Yeah, nasally
sounding white dudes.
You know, you say what you want about the Beastie Boys, man. That's just, they were awesome. They're still awesome.
I'm with you, JP. Don't listen to this hater.
What does Josh Lee know anyways? Every week I listen to Super
actually,
Game
no, I just, I just have no, I have no semblance of Josh Lee's music taste. So I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just, I literally don't know how he's going to react whenever I bring up Enya or
Chiptunes,
Machine Head.
Mm.
Actually, I just wanted to say those two in order.
Didn't you bring up Enigma one week? I'm pretty sure you did. I think that was you. I think that means you have bad taste. You're out. JP's out.
I just have.
What do you? Next. No. See,
I just
okay.
have taste in music. I've never claimed that. I like what I like. Damn it,
Josh. You grew up in Illinois, so you're familiar with the great Q101. I grew up listening to Q101, man. Like. Right. Yeah. So I gravitate back to 90s alternative. So if like current music has got roots in 90s alternative, that's what I'm going to go for.
Sure, sure. I'm with you there. I can anything from like my high school summer days or something like that. That's okay with me. So
yeah.
I'm not hating on that. All right, Justin, threesomes, sir.
Three of them? I have them. I actually finally succumbed to the awesomeness of Parks and Rec.
Damn time.
I fought that show because I wanted to love it when it first came out, and that first half season was completely boring and average. And so I took a friend's advice, and I think I was watching on Netflix, and I started with season 3, so skipped season 2 entirely. And about by the third episode, I started to really like all of the characters. And especially, I think when it clicked for me was understanding and appreciating Rob Lowe's character, who's like the most positive guy in the world. And because I'm really used to seeing Rob Lowe in like kind of sleazy type of characters. So once I started to get that, and the fact that this show's kind of unique in regards that there aren't really any overly negative people or bad people on the show. Usually there's somebody to hate, but this show manages to keep it pretty upbeat and but they never really go like slapstick with it. And I just think it's a really well put together show, and I'm on board with Ron Swanson as one of the best active characters on TV right now. So I have since gone back and watched seasons 1 and 2 and really like them now that I know how the show works. So
this sounds like my experience with Community.
Yeah, like I can see that with Community.
Yeah, it's like, I don't really care because I don't really watch, you know, sitcoms and stuff. I don't really care about comedy television. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like, but everyone talks about it. Oh, it's the best. And it was always just kind of annoying. And then I caught one. It's like, shit, that was kind of funny. I should probably check out some more. And then like, all right, now we can just watch them all because it was good.
That first season of Community is like barely identifiable as Community, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's so off the wall anymore, but
I couldn't get through 2 episodes of Community, but I choked down Parks and Recreation, and they rewarded me swimmingly. So, I mean, it's about time you got on board, because I think I've talked about in my few podcast appearances Parks and Recreation, and I've told you that Ron Swanson and his Pyramid of Greatness is like the greatest television comedy bit right now.
It's very entertaining. I'll give it that.
Yeah.
But I also like your endorsement of of Parks and Rec. Choke it down. Put that put that back on the DVD box.
Parks and that's like Saints Row the Third. Strap it on.
Right, I think I think you're on your way to some ridiculous marketing company that's going to get fired a lot.
So Justin, is Parks and Rec in 5.1 surround sound?
It is in 3.1.
Oh.
I recently finally purchased a surround sound system for our place. It was the kind of missing piece to the living room experience, but I don't have a good place for the rear speakers yet. I'm still figuring that out. But I did.
And
buy...
you did not go home theater in a box.
No.
You actually
I pieced this out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So clips for the speakers, an Onkyo receiver, and one of the nice little bonus features. I mean, this sounds so old now, but something I haven't utilized before and something I was really missing in my house was the ability to just play music in our living room. It's kind of the center of our house, and we just never had a good speaker set to do that. And I listen to most of my music is through Spotify on my iPhone anymore. So the fact that it has iPod iPhone support has made dinner much more enjoyable, as far as I'd rather have music on than like a show in the background. And so really happy to kind of start filling that out. And the gaming side of this is now I actually have an attachment to actually hook my headphones into my TV so I can play more games in the living room after the girls have gone to bed. And I don't have to use my kind of RF headphones that have that little tinny noise. So
have you had the house to yourself yet to be able to play a game like with the surround cranked up?
Not yet. I just really got everything installed Wednesday, and then I want to set up the 5.1, and I just got Game of Thrones Blu-ray, so I will be blaring that at some point, and then probably doing some Mass Effect 3 just to surround myself, envelop myself in that. So I was excited.
Yeah, that's home theater is like one of those big milestones you got in a man's life, I think. and eventually, when you have your own man cave, that's the stereo that'll move into there, and you'll get some like a sound bar or something kind of chintzy for your living room.
But I have to
you won't care. Oh, here you go, girls, have a inferior product.
I have to digress because one of my friends has pretty much the ultimate man cave at this point. It's the cornerstone of his is a 120-inch projection screen TV and an amazing surround sound. And I played games on that system this weekend. Don't do that after you buy something that you're proud of. Like, don't do that to yourself. Like,
what did you play on that?
Oh, we played WWE All-Stars. and some SSX looked pretty cool on it too, but
hey, I forgot we played that weekend.
I had those games still in my bag from Horrible Night Out, but if you know it's important to kind of revel in those major purchases, and I should have stayed away from his system for a little bit longer and enjoyed mine for what it is, but I'm still really happy with my purchases, and I don't know, just feeling like I got a good deal. So
yeah, any way you can justify it.
And then movies-wise, I finally checked out The Lincoln Lawyer. I think it went free to play on Netflix, or I just noticed it, one of the two. The Matthew McConaughey legal movie where he defends all kinds of terrible people and kind of has this mantra of the hardest client is an innocent client. But it's just, you know, he seems like he'd be kind of not really a hero to a movie, and just because of his character, but he has some interesting morals and the story. I enjoyed it, and I recommend checking it out.
The Lincoln Lawyer.
Yeah. He drives a Lincoln car, town car.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. It's all like in LA and stuff. So, but,
Yeah. Okay. Cool. That's good. So I would normally go to Ethan now. However, the terrible things I said about Mass Effect 3's endings made him sick. Oh my God. He ran out of the room. He was crying. He was tearing off his shirt. It was real sweaty.
Shepard, no.
Oh man. Yeah, so he had to leave us. Very sorry. I hope he gets better soon.
Yeah, we've been podcasting in some nasty sauna-like condition, so I'm sure that didn't help either.
Yeah, you know, I guess it could have been that, too.
But we're doing it for the fans. You have to point that
That's
out.
Right. That's right, yeah. The rest of us are going to soldier on. Okay, so, you know, this isn't exactly big Blu-ray release season right now. Movies are kind of few and far between. So we will burn through all the new stuff when it comes out, you know, the big titles, the popcorn flicks. When that happens, we'll go to a backlog, but we've already gone through the backlog. So it's like, all right, let's go digging deep on the, you know, on the Netflix or off the DVD shelf or whatever. And so I got, for some reason, and I don't know what happened, but just in the last couple of months, Kylie has been real, like, just been all about, like, the horror films. So she always hates it. She'll never watch any of that stuff. But then recently she's like, hey, you want to watch Paranormal Activity tonight or whatever? I'm like, what? You know, she'll get into those movies. I'll get into them too. You know, I like being scared a little bit. It's good. I like that tense feeling. She gets a little more scared or whatever. You know, I think maybe it's, you know, may come out in her dreams or whatever. She doesn't want that. I'm like, okay, that's cool. You don't have to watch that stuff. And then recently, though, she's been into it. So I thought, I was like, you know what? We were looking through the movies, and there was Event Horizon, and she knew nothing about it. And this is, like, one of my favorite movies. You guys have seen it, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's seen it. It's, like, yeah. 97.
I was about to say, fuck you for having to feel like you needed to preface this movie so much. Like, you don't need an excuse to watch Event Horizon is all I'm saying.
Well, no, except for the fact that I knew if I just – and I didn't tell her any of this stuff.
Okay.
She didn't know what it was about. I was like, oh, it's like a science fiction movie. It's got the guy from Matrix and the guy from Jurassic Park.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, oh, you know, like, okay, you know, whatever. So I throw it in. Just knowing that, like, if I had done this 6 months ago, we would have been 15 minutes in and the first terrible imagery that would come on the screen of people getting dismembered or whatever, she would have just been not okay with that. And so, yeah, watch the whole thing. And it was, she's just like, oh my God, this is fucked up. You know, like, yeah, it's really fucked up. How are you doing? Cool. And so, yeah, at the end of it, she's like, oh, that was so depressing. Oh my God. I'm like, yeah, but you know, some people made it, you know, it was good. They ended, you know, some people made it, whatever. And, but anyways, the thing that, like, this time I've seen it so many times that, you know, I'm just, you always kind of like think about the movies more while you're watching them, the more you've seen it. And I was thinking about, like, that ship, like, folds space, and while it's folding, when it goes between the two points, where does it go? I think it goes the same place that Nightcrawler goes when he bamfs. It's the same hell. So I'd like to think that maybe there's, like, an alternate ending of that where Nightcrawler pops out of, like, the closet or something like that. That's how he got to be an X-Man. He hitched a ride on the Event Horizon.
Nightcrawler is much more badass than I give him credit for.
yeah, just survive the things that are on the other side.
It's like, I'd be scared to death to teleport after doing that once.
Yeah, right. Okay, so, and then this is one of those, like, go digging deep on Netflix and just picking a random one. Vanishing on 7th Street. I don't know, it was like a year ago or something like that. Ethan mentioned it in one of his threesomes of the week on the old horrible show format. And I remember him saying it sucked. And I saw it and I was like, oh man, I think this probably sucks. But the premise sounds fun. So let's watch it anyways. Yeah, it was pretty bad. Yeah. but it was pretty much like Alan Wake, the movie, meets the things from Ghost, meets Langoliers. I mean, Ethan pretty much nailed it. Everything he said, just that.
Yeah,
don't watch it. It's pretty bad. John Leguizamo is one of the worst actors of all time.
I like his work as Clown.
He did the Clown. I was going to say, the Clown is the only thing he ever did that wasn't complete, utter trash.
And the Sloth. The Sloth and I.
Oh, God. It's the same. He plays the same dude. It's awful. His stand-up's awful. His acting is awful. I can't believe people have paid him money to do anything.
All those people hanging.
Romeo and Juliet.
What? He was on.
He was. Yeah. Who was
in the very beginning of the
Tibble.
Movie
he was
when
Tibble.
That guy?
Oh yeah, God.
He set the gas station on fire.
Who thought that was a good idea? Whatever. He's terrible. Don't watch it because John Leguizamo.
No, watch it because Claire Danes is hot.
And okay. I was talking about Vanishing on 7th Street. You can watch.
Oh, no, don't watch that at all.
No, I have trouble deciphering some of Ethan's opinions on movies, but like, there's a certain genre related to like campy action horror type of movies where if he tells me to stay away, like that is a giant red flag. Like, I can't necessarily trust his opinion if he says it's good, but I can trust him. Stay the fuck away from this. I was like, well, right. That must be really bad.
Right. I did get some surprisingly good horror in, though. This is off of – this is from a recommendation, but this is off Amazon Instant Video.
Mm-hmm.
It's not on Netflix or anything, but Dead Set. This was a – I don't know what they call it in Britain, like miniseries, I guess, like a five-episode show. It's the complete run.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't canceled. It's like it was made for that length. I've seen other shows like this too, but it's like $2 an episode. Totally worth it, $10. Dead Set is the name of it. It's like it's a zombie apocalypse show, and it's set on like the set of Big Brother, and it's like so, it's not just about the people on like just the cast members or anything like that. It's actually much more. You see everything outside too. They're only like part of it, but it was parts of it were pretty funny. There's an asshole in it, like this producer guy who I've never seen him in anything before, but he plays an amazing asshole. Like he's like the British asshole, like the, you know, Ricky Gervais does it really well.
Okay.
You know, like that kind of character. And oh my God, he's such a douche. And there's some scenes where he's with this just really just vapid, just stupid bitch. Like this, I mean, probably the dumbest character like maybe I've seen in movies in a long time. And this guy who's like the biggest asshole, and he's just saying all these stupid, terrible things to her, and half of them she doesn't even understand, and it's really funny. And but the actual like the horror parts, like the zombie parts, like the violence and all that stuff, is super gory and very realistic. And they don't it's actually not really campy in the ways you might think this would be. Like you're like, wow, you know, it's like they're paying attention to all these little details, and you know, about like the all the zombie tropes and stuff like that, you know, like, you know, oh, somebody gets bit and they turn in X amount of time, and like, oh, a little scratch even, you know, those kinds of things. And they like pay attention to the little stuff. It was awesome. I loved it. It was great. And if you're not completely burnt out on everything zombie, check out Dead Set.
I went on a ride with that description, but I think I'm on board. Yeah.
And you can buy one episode at a time. Okay. There's five episodes. $2, so you can just grab that first one. If you didn't like it, you're out $2. I'll pay you $2. Send me your PayPal.
That.
And up to a limit. I've got a maximum of $10. I'll pay out.
This is coming from the guy that was going to raise money for my gamertag change.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, where's my $10?
You trust Josh Lee with money? That's your own problem.
I wouldn't trust Josh Lee with a quarter. Or even like a candy bar.
I was just about to say, oh, but maybe we'll do it now since you're one of my super gaming best friends. Then you said that.
I think that's what I'm going to do at the end of these shows, is just set up our guests for failure to ever return.
Well, I think we're 5 for 5 now, aren't we? Well, no, you didn't get to do it to John last week because he left early. So
That's right.
But you don't know what happened behind the scenes, man.
That's true. But I think with every staff writer, I think that you've hated them in some way by the time we get to this point.
Yeah. They are super gaming best friends.
Only online.
I give everyone a chance.
Hey, but guess what? I bet I'll be on in like 3 months. So.
Yeah. Yep. Or longer now.
That's what they think.
Well,
Oh, Justin, is that conference call you wanted later so you could fire me?
All right. That'll do it. That'll do it for another another super friendly episode of Super Gaming Best Friends.
I love you guys.
I'm still sweaty.
On behalf of my super buddies, Justin Lacey, JP LaFrance, and sweaty, sick Ethan Moses, thanks for joining us.
I'm waving with two hands right now.
We'll see you back
on. Are you sure you're not trying to dry off that way?
Can I please sign off this fucking show?
No.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
No.
BFFs.
No.
Peace.
No.
Super Gaming.